again with thoughts and prayers. Bow, bow.
Stop it.
Sorry. Was that insensitive?
It was really fucking insensitive of you, Jake.
Oh, are we not all thoughts and prayersing right now? Yeah. 2 days in a trot or 3 days in a trot now? Like, I don't know. How many mass shoot? I've only got so many thoughts and so many prayers to give.
Well, yeah, there's been, you know, more mass shootings. And I thought mass shootings were like 2016 era kind of thing, but now they're back apparently again.
They never went away.
Well, so it just wasn't being reported on and it's just been happening.
No, so like maybe like last year, I mean, you would like to think that lockdowns had a heavy effect on mass shootings, right? So it'd be interesting to see the numbers for that. So maybe last year was like kind of pretty low, but I guess things are getting eased up again. Stuff starts opening up. Little trigger finger starts getting a little itchy, you know? You got all them guns and all that ammo to shoot. And I mean, what are you supposed to do?
No, honestly, like I honestly think that we've been so embroiled in crisis after crisis after crisis that it's like difficult to keep track of, you know, the stuff that was going on. Like, especially last year when the whole beheading thing happened again in France, it was like, oh, terrorism's back. And then it was, oh, the right wing terrorism. And then it's the fucking lockdowns. And like, there's always something to fucking be panicking and like catastrophizing about. But yeah, these mass shootings have been really interesting because people have been trying to assign motive to them pretty much right off the bat, which I think is pretty fucking sad and like shameful. Like, if you're really concerned with understanding crime and protecting victims, why are you trying to like shove these mass shootings into whatever political agenda or trying to sort of use them to pathologize certain communities? It seems like that's what these things are used for. It's you know, the same kind of way that it's used to be like, oh, Muslims are terrorists and blah, blah, blah. It's sort of used to pathologize white men, incels, like whatever sort of suits the agenda, even if we don't know the full facts of every single case. Like the one that happened in Atlanta recently, there was a shooting at a massage parlor and immediately it was sort of linked to anti-Asian violence, even though the actual motive of the killer is still yet to be probed into or like figured out.
Well, yet to be figured out, but we can take a fairly educated guess, can't we? You know? Yeah. So, I mean, he goes to a massage parlor, eh? Yeah. And he's a lonely fella. He doesn't get much attention. And then he goes to this place, gets a bit of attention, maybe gets a little bit too frisky, or some altercation happens, or some disagreement, or maybe he's just weird and they don't want to have him there anymore, and so they just refuse to serve him, which is any business's right in whatever fucking America. And yeah, so now he came back with his fucking gun and he did his bang 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 and they're all fucking done. So
that's kind of what I was thinking. I was worried about why it was sort of immediately getting lumped into this kind of anti-Asian agenda that the media is sort of talking about. I mean, now there's sort of a Asian Lives Matter-esque kind of organization. And
I wasn't just saying that because it was an Asian massage parlor and he was going there. It's been reported that he's claimed he's a sex addict or he's got sexual problems or something like that. So it's not just me being like, oh, he's gone for sex, obviously, because he's at an Asian massage parlor. Nice one. You try to get me. That's not what I was saying.
Cancelled. Cancelled. No, but honestly, yeah, the fact that they're sort of trying to make it, assign this sort of political motive to it that kind of feeds into the culture war narrative that's being spun at the moment is kind of what gives me a lot of pause. And again, with the mass shooting that's happened, it seems as if these sort of liberals are just like waiting for mass shootings to happen so that they can like stand there with their faces pressed against the window, like hoping that it kind of fits into the agenda of pathologizing whatever community they decide needs pathologizing, or to make a huge stink about, you know, the rampant threat of like white supremacy and all of this stuff. Like, it's sad to me because it's not really about figuring out what causes crime in society. And the majority of crime in society and violence doesn't fit into these neat little political boxes. Like, crime has always been a part of society, and to try and jam it into these political boxes hinders us being able to figure out why it happens in the first place or to do anything about it.
What baffles me is you're absolutely right about, you know, crime in general. I mean, baffles us why crime in general. I mean, there's certainly socioeconomic, and that's such a stupid fucking blanket term, socioeconomic reasons why they're blah, 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 blah. But, you know, people disenfranchised from school, they get picked on from fucking authority maybe and they fucking strike out, like, whatever. There's all sorts of fucking reasons. But mass shootings in particular, that does seem to be an issue only in really one major, so quote-unquote, civilized first world nation, isn't it? Mm. Does seem to be an occurrence, a regular occurrence in only one nation. And that one nation does also politically seem to not want to talk about the one thing that does cause mass shootings, which does tend to be the fact that most people own a gun or, like, a lot of guns, just generally, that you can get with fucking no problem at all. You know what I mean? So I think that's a definite link. And I think a lot of the time, Americans are not... I'm surprised that it's not talked about more by liberals, to be honest. And I know that Jimmy Fallon will cry about it every now and then when something happens, but not to the point where you're like, why literally, like, do something about it. Like, nothing. Like, I'm so surprised.
The thing is, it's because nothing can be done about it, which is the reason why, especially as things stand now, like, the amount of, like, business interests and corporate interests that are intertwined, like the fucking, the fact that gun lobbyists are, like, some of the highest paid lobbyists, like, you know, it has its pockets in, like, every branch of government. There's, like, all kinds of crazy interests going on behind the scenes that prevent any sort of conversation on gun control happening, and it just isn't going to happen. It's so fucking interlocked and interwoven into the fabric of, like, American identity and also the idea of the rugged individual as well. The fact that it's your right to bear arms, and it doesn't matter about society as a whole or, you know, the collective responsibility that we have for one another. It's about you protecting your property and your rights and blah, blah, blah. So yeah, it's a huge part of, like, American ideology. But yeah, I don't know. I don't see anything.
But whenever you talk to sort of, like, quote unquote lefties about it, they sort of propagate this almost Alex Jones level sort of paranoia fantasy about, yeah, like, yeah, oh, but we need to protect us from the government. The government's going to come and do this. Yeah. And it's like, it's already spying on you. Yeah. It's already like doing everything, pretty much everything that you're saying that I need these guns to protect me from. Yeah. So when is that coming?
They're put through laws that limit your ability to protest. You know, they're fucking spying on you. They can kill and disappear you whenever the fuck they want to, and it's happened many times. I mean, if you look at, like, you know, into some of these quote unquote terrorist events that have happened, like, the CIA literally gives guns to mentally defective people who are part of certain groups that they want to demonize and eggs them on into committing certain crimes so that they can say, oh, look, we're, you know, doing our job, we're fighting anti-terrorism. Like, literally everything that they jail people without due process, they take away people's civil liberties without due process, they put through laws that limit your ability to, you know, organize and all of these different things. So everything that they say that they are trying to protect themselves with the right to bear arms, is already fucking happening, like you said. Really and truly, a lot of the time it's like a posture, and like you see this sort of thing happen all the time with like lefties, like quote unquote, on social media, where they'll be like posing with an AR-15, most of whom actually have like serious mental health issues and shouldn't be anywhere near a fucking gun. Like, but it's just such a like, it's such an intrinsic part of like, and Americans can understand it. Cause like when I remember, cause I went to high school there, and it was when I went to high school, it was like the first time I ever saw an armed police guard, and I was terrified. I was so viscerally like terrified, cause it's not something you see here in the UK, unless you're in like London during a time of high security or like you're at an airport. Like,
I would say London for the last 3 years now, yeah, probably, to yeah, be honest, most officers, yeah, I see are armed to more of an extent than they, yeah, were previously. Yeah. So, and I think that's part of the militarization of the police and, yeah, stuff and all the rest of it. But I don't think that's a standard throughout the whole country. Yeah. I think in maybe like major cities, Birmingham, etc., yeah, like, you know, Manchester, whatever, you're going to have armed police. Yeah. But back where at the Shire, where I'm from, there wasn't arms police.
Not even that. When I was growing up, that wasn't the case. Like you said, it's been basically a phenomenon that's increased over the last couple of years because of the major terrorist, quote unquote, events that have happened in the last couple of years in London. But whenever I do see it, it fucking terrifies me. But it's just like a normal part of life in America, which is what I think that a lot of Europeans like who look in on these things and see it just don't understand. It's just part of it. And there's also the idea that like whenever you're going out anywhere, you're just kind of risking it. Whenever you send your kids to school, they're just kind of risking it. And I think if there was one thing that was going to make America think about this problem, it would have been Sandy Hook. But not even that was enough. So I just don't think that it's a problem that's going to be solved. I think it's going to constantly be a cycle of violence and recrimination and culture war, and it's going to continue to sort of spiral out of control.
Well, I don't know how to address my appreciation for Alex Jones. I feel weird calling myself a fan of Alex Jones, but at the same time, like, I mean, the Sandy Hook thing is kind of obviously, I was a pivotal part of his career as well. Yeah. And I feel like his involvement with just how much, press was really focused on all of the things he was and wasn't saying around Sandy Hook, yeah, really took away from any serious talk about gun control,
yeah,
or anything, yeah, like that. It all became around, you're fucking nuts, of course these people aren't crisis actors, which is like, I mean, that's kind of a given. So move on to the next point. Yeah, but
again, it always gets caught up in the miasma of culture war. Yeah. And nobody ever really gets to the point where they can talk about the real issues that cause these things to happen and how preventative measures can be taken. Those conversations are not interesting, especially if they're getting in the way of power, especially if they're getting in the way of fucking profit. So of course they would rather you fought about whether all incels should be locked in prison lest they go and kill women, or whether or not, you know, Asian lives matter. Because now the big fight that's going on, which I find hilarious, is Asians are now saying that black people should support their Asian Lives Matter and like advise them, and it's black people are saying, oh well, nobody was putting pressure on Asians to help black people when black people were in the shit, so why the fuck should we care? And like it's become this kind of cross-ethnic fight. There's been a lot of footage on the news, especially of violent crime committed from blacks towards Asians. It just seems like this whole psyop-y divide and conquer sort of thing that's going on.
Oh, look, things are not well with the non-whites. Yeah, they're fighting again.
The non-whites are at it again. I don't know. I mean, of course, there's definitely, and that's the thing, there's definitely tension among communities. Like, most of the working class black people I know are equal opportunity fucking racists. Like, they don't like other black people. They also don't like white people. They don't like Asians. They don't like anybody, really. And a lot of people are like that. A lot of people, even Asians, they don't like other Asians, they don't like fucking black, they don't like, so there's obviously the natural sort of weird like ethnic horseplay that happens. But then there's like actual hate crimes and like racism that exists in society, which is a totally separate issue and should be dealt with a lot more care and nuance than using it as this sort of culture war battleground whenever something serious happens. And it just seems like it's like cheap. They've cheapened it. It's become so cheap now, to the point where when this sort of thing happens, your reaction is like blasé, almost. Like it's completely blasé.
Well, it's funny because South Park did an episode about this exact like issue, early on in South, yeah, Park's, yeah, season, I think from season 4 or 5 or something. And it's like literally put as simply as like, if you punch another person, it's a crime. If you punch another person of a different color, it's a hate crime. It's just like, is it as simple as that? I mean, like, I think that people could punch people of a different color despite the fact they're a different color. Do you know what I mean? Like, the reason they're punching them is not to do with the color.
It's about spin and sensationalism, which is the thing. Like, maybe if we're serious, we should be going on about trying to abolish journalism, for fuck's sake. Like, because journalism is the one that causes all of this fucking bullshit. I'm joking, journalism is important, but in its current stage, it's about spin. It's about finding a way to sensationalize these things in a way that sort of distracts from the actual problems that go on beneath the surface. And it's way more sexy and it sells more papers. Well, like, we're not in paper time, but it gets more clicks. It gets more views when you say something is motivated by hatred or motivated by sexism, or then, oh, this person who's an incel and who has some fucking sexual addiction got rejected from his favorite quote unquote massage parlor and went on a revenge spree. It's not easy to the only person who is pathologized then is the person who committed the crime. But if you say it was racially motivated, well, then that has broader implications and implicates a whole range and a whole host of societal people and all of these different things. And that is more sensational and it gets people more emotionally invested than actually just looking at what's going on the ground. And that's what I mean. Like when I say like people let the media turn them into fucking ambulance chasers, so many, and especially the so-called leftists and stuff, they allow the media to fucking turn them into ambulance chasers, constantly hopping from one tragedy to another, constantly hopping on from one cause to another. Like this whole Asian Lives Matter thing is just another mechanism from the Democratic Party and, you know, the NGO industrial complex to sort of funnel money and, you know, activist power and all of those things back down these fucking pipelines, in my opinion. That's all it is.
It also just doesn't, like, you know, doesn't feel like it's apples and apples, if you know what I mean. Mm. Like, so, I mean, so Black Lives Matter is around institutional violence towards black people and stuff. I mean, it's not like it's not an institution this guy came from to come and kill all these Asians, and it's not an institution that these other random acts of violence that have been captured are all part of.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was the police, the state, that was doing this to black people.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, to me, it doesn't feel apples and apples, but that might just be me.
But,
I don't know.
No, you're right, but there is a sort of hierarchy of oppression, because the sort of goal of this kind of liberal form of social justice isn't really to create a honest and true meritocracy. It's about creating a hierarchy of victimhood and a hierarchy of quote unquote vulnerability. And that's what you're seeing, all of these different identity groups sort of vying for their space on the rung and looking for a way to bring sort of attention and sympathy and all of these different aspects to themselves, rather than like finding actual true ways of dealing with whatever problems they might be facing in a way that allows for dignity, for fuck's sake. For dignity. You know, of course, Asian Americans face a lot of fucking, you know, discrimination in America. Nobody fucking discounts that. But Asian Americans also do pretty fucking well compared to other groups in America. So for them, so for this whole kind of like, there's no dignified way for us to deal with our problems without rolling around on our bellies. Like, I just don't buy it. I don't fucking buy it.
Yeah. So the Asian Americans are the highest earning
minority
or ethnic group in America, according to the median 2019 poll. Median income Asians coming close to 100,000, white people coming close to 75K, Hispanics coming close to 55K, and blacks coming down to 45.
Yeah, and that's kind of what, you know, stresses me out about this, because of course there are poor members of the Asian community. But when we're looking at things statistically and in terms of how entire populations and the problems that those populations face, the economic aspect is also a huge part of it. And there has to be a more dignified way to deal with problems that are facing those communities. And even when it comes to black people, who are some of the lowest earners, there's no dignity in the way that these sort of NGO-backed, like, you know, cause movementism things advise us to deal with the issues that happen in our communities. And also the rush to politicize things that occur is also something that is incredibly fucking deleterious to any cause. When there needs to be the sort of patience and the understanding to unpick things and understand them for what they are. But when you're living in a world where the media is incentivized to drum up, you know, panic and drum up moral panic and suspicion and sensationalism, it's incredibly difficult to come to any kind of truth because you're not incentivized to. Like, journalism is completely fucking dead. It's fucked. It's completely dead.
It's dead to the point that when you click on, I don't know, at least a lot of Guardian articles and things that I've read recently, a lot of them contain tweets.
Yeah.
So you're just like, so you, I'm reading an article of someone talking about what people have tweeted about. Is this the news? Is this journalism now? Like, that's fucking crazy. Like, was it last episode where I was talking about, like, when you're a kid, you imagine, like, there's that, those people that are doing investigative journalism and they're, like, actually kind of, like, you know, going undercover and fucking, you know, getting the scoops on, like, all the important things and, like, investigating all the things that you assume that adults are, like, taking care of. Mm-hmm. Well, no. None of it. And, like, none of the adults are taking care of it either. They're all just taking care of themselves and their own self-interest and their own fucking interests of their fucking mates and shit. C'est la vie, fucking, you know, all of the fucking shit you like in the UK and everything. It's all been just fair game for the Conservatives to divvy up to all of their friends, hasn't it? So,
well, you, personally, Jakey Bear, you are bad in a crisis. I remember...
I'm bad in a crisis?
Yeah, you're bad in a fucking crisis.
How? Why?
So I'll tell you the story of when there was a quote-unquote, like, terrorist attack in London at one time.
Come on. This is not fair.
It's fair. Your tea is being spilled. So it was like a quote-unquote terrorist attack in London. And basically, I was working in Warren Street at the time, and Jake was in Soho, which is about a 15-minute walk from one another. So I'm in my office, and it's like in Fitzrovia or whatever, and I'm facing outward, and I see all this commotion happening. And bear in mind, this is Fitzrovia. Like, nothing fucking happens in that area of central London except for, like, business people walking around and shit. So I was in my office. I'm looking out of the window. There's fucking police cars everywhere, police with guns everywhere, and, like, workers, like, running up and down and shit. And I'm like, well, what the fuck? So I look at Twitter to check, like, what's going on or whatever. And they were saying that there was a terrorist attack in London, or there was a sort of like an anticipated terrorist attack in London. And it was right after the time there was that one on the bridge that happened on London Bridge. So the city was already, like, on high alert. So they were basically warning everyone to stay out of the tubes and to try and get home on the buses or, like, in a cab or whatever the fuck. So I was like, shit, like, I need to call Jake because, like, it's closing time and I'm, like, alone and I'm scared. So I'm calling Jake. I'm texting him. He's not fucking picking up. He's not answering at all. So I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to have to walk all the way to Soho to fucking get this boy. So I'm, like, running. And then I get out of the office and I'm running because everyone on the street is running, like, as everyone's just, like, running. It's like helter skelter panic. I've never seen London like this before. It was absolutely fucking insane. And, like, I'm running too because everyone else is running, so I'm like, I better fucking run. And there's, like, literal police in, like, black cars with guns, and they're, like, wearing masks and shit. It was, like, terrifying. So I finally get to Soho Square, and his fucking office door is locked, and I'm just out there crying and, like, weeping, and everyone's, like, running around, and it's, like, absolutely insane. But then luckily the reception guy saw me outside and let me in, and he was like, oh, don't worry, Angie, like, don't cry, I'll go find Mr. Jake for you, no problem. Jake comes up from his fucking studio. He's been in the basement, totally, completely oblivious to what's going on. I'm there in tears, like, literally crying. And he's like, what's going on, babe? Why are you crying? What's happening? And I'm like, literally, have you not heard? Have you not seen what's happening? And you're literally just there, completely hunky-dory, oblivious to everything that's happening.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, yeah, that was pretty surreal, to be honest. I literally, like, emerged from underground and then just, like, saw all the windows and, like, oh fuck, no, sorry, I'll bleep it out, it doesn't fucking matter. I saw all the fucking windows and then all these people fucking running around, and you're just, like, bawling your eyes out in the lobby. It's like, what the fuck has happened? It's like, are we at war? It's like, something bad's happened. And then I think it was something bad had happened, in all fairness. I think it was when all the acid attacks had started happening.
No,
wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. That specific incident was actually a false alarm, basically.
Well then, there we go. No fucking cause. No fucking cause, is there then? I was absolutely right.
I was so angry with you because your phone was... I don't know if you didn't have signal because you were, like, in the basement or whatever in your studio. And then I fucking was, like, crying and calling you and screaming for you, and you didn't, like, fucking hear me. And it was like, what if it was real, Jake? What if it was real, huh? I would have been out there on my own running through London, like, in the pandemonium with everyone else while you were just there chilling, which is typical Jake behavior.
Yeah. I mean, I think I remember, like, my friend as well that I work with was... like oddly just really like zen about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And we're just like, yeah, this, you know, these things happen. It's, you know, you're going to be okay though. Everything's going to be fine. You know, you just, you know, you get home, everything will be fine. It's just, nothing's happening. No, it's going
to
be fine.
As crazy as it is, mate, I don't fucking play. Like anytime it comes to anything crazy like that, especially because I've lived in America and stuff where everyone's like on high alert all the time. Like whenever anything crazy like that happens, like I'm always like fucking, I don't play with my life. I'll push anyone out of the way, old women, children, whatever the fuck, I'm going to survive this, which is exactly how
I'm like, I'm not being funny, but like as someone that recreationally smokes a lot of drugs, like I don't like being around police generally. And that might just be because I've always lived in a place where that's illegal and that's fair enough. But also at the same time, I don't trust like that around police with fucking guns. Yeah. It makes me super fucking prang. And I think like when we were in New York, like I don't think it was quite legal at the time or it was medicinal. I certainly couldn't have fucking had a 8th on me legally or whatever the fuck. And we were just walking around. We were going to go to someone else's apartment or whatever, just hang out or whatever. I was like, oh yeah, I'll bring in this new pipe I got, or that new pipe that you got, and you know, we'll take this nice weed that we got and we'll go and head there. Thinking nothing of it. I'm like, that's my protocol. That's like how I operate. So and it's just not, it's just second nature. And I see, yeah, literally fucking NYPD there. I think it was not just NYPD. It was like, they were an NYPD obviously, but they were like another level above your normal. Cause when we went through the station, they had fucking machine, like assault rifles and shit. Yeah, not just like a fucking pistol or a handgun or whatever. They had like full on assault rifles. Yeah. So it's like, fuck man, like that freaked me out big time. Like whenever I'm places I shouldn't be and there are fucking people with weapons, mate, that have due course to use them against me, like that makes me fucking super prang. So either a bunch of people in America are all very fucking straight edge motherfuckers that don't like to take a lot of drugs, or they're just used to that amount of insanity. Of course, like that is just, I don't know, like it's just fucking crazy, man.
It is really crazy. And sometimes I feel the need to sort of remind my American friends that it's not normal. And I know quite a bit of our audience is American, and like it's not normal. And you have to keep reminding yourself that none of this shit is normal. And also the media fucking sensationalism around it as well is not something that you can help be healthy and be caught up in. Like it's not, it's going to fucking ruin your brain. It's going to make you view other human beings as like an entire demographics as like evil and demonic. Like it's just, it's not good. And also, yeah, the gun stuff, it's not normal. It really isn't.
But I think you're right. I think Sandy Hook was the thing that would have done it, because if I'm remembering correctly, it was a school or a child shooting, at least in the UK, that led to the large sweeping of most or all of guns, especially being recreationally purchased for shit. Like you have to go through a hell of a lot of shit now to get a gun. I think illegally, supposedly, it's fairly easy to get a gun from some supposedly hard men I've met at like nightclubs and stuff that chat a lot of fucking shit. Yeah. Maybe someone can correct me and tell me that that's absolutely true, but I got fucking doubts on that. Like the scattiest person that I knew that had due course to have a fucking gun, his main fucking weapon was a scythe, mate. So I don't know how easy it is really to get a fucking gun in the UK.
Scatty John makes an appearance again. But yeah, it's crazy. It's absolutely insane. And yeah, I'm still kind of watching the stuff unfold from like a distance. But it's just part of like the American sort of media cycle at this point. And I'm interested to see how it continues to play out historically, because it's obviously something that can't sustain itself. It's not something that can sustain itself for a long time. The sort of psychic terror that everyone is constantly living in, it's gonna implode in on itself eventually. You know,
but it's also just like, I think there's an amount of, it showcases the American solipsism, because it's like, is it that you see like that all the other nations are gonna catch on to the fact that everyone should that everyone should have a gun, and that we're all just behind, and that we just don't get it? Or is it that you're the only nation that still needs to fucking get it and, like, get rid of all your fucking, like, guns for people and shit? Because, like, it's that sort of, like, yeah, the way we've got it is correct and everyone else should be, you know, doing what we're doing.
There's also the sort of delusions of grandeur, like we said at the beginning of the episode. Like, all the things that, quote-unquote, guns are supposed to protect you from are already fucking happening. Your freedoms are already fucking gone. Like, they're already fucking gone. Like, it's just what it is. So, I don't really see much merit in those arguments, but yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. In other news, moving on the docket, Bernie Sanders went off on Elon Musk recently as well, which I thought was really hilarious. He sort of highlighted the idea of going to Mars as this kind of escapist fantasy, and how we should be spending money to fix the problems that we have here on Earth, which is kind of a smooth brain, obvious take, of course. But at the same time, it kind of brings to mind the debate about the kind of Apollonian future-focused impulses of the elite and the clear fucking economic material issues that we have and what we should be prioritizing. I feel like that conversation doesn't really happen. People just sort of clown Elon Musk and call him an idiot, but you don't see too many people actually kind of criticizing his ideology and that kind of Apollonian kind of future-focused idea of where our resources should be put.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's like an existential thing that it brings up. So although it might be fairly smooth-brained to be like, you as a private businessman shouldn't be spending millions of dollars in your endeavors to, like, feed homeless. Like, is Elon Musk gonna scrap SpaceX and spend that money on feeding people? Like, no, that's never gonna be a reality. No. I think he's obviously highlighting wealth inequality and all that. And he's making good points and whatever. But it's also, it's the grander existential thing of, should we be chasing this, like, sci-fi, like, adventure, pretty much? Or this sci-fi narrative that we want to tell ourselves as a species, that we've conquered the elements and we've gone out and strived so far that we've conquered space and we've gone out and, you know, spread ourselves out into other planets. Like, there's that, or there's, you know, we've got so much stuff going on here and climate change and everything else that we need to kind of secure our future here. And exactly that, like, where the resources should go, like, if you can even do both simultaneously. Mm-hmm. But, like, I think it's definitely possible to do both simultaneously, because the NASA budget is fuck all in comparison to the, you know, national budget or whatever. Like, and that's the most advanced, arguably, you know, space fucking, especially nationally owned, you know, space institution there is on the planet. So can you do both? You can absolutely do fucking both, I think.
Yeah.
But it's just, I think it's like getting the focus on both and not just like, oh, fuck, Earth is fucked. All the rich people are going to go to Mars and we're going to be here to be fucking stuck with the rest of it. Like, that's depressing. That's like so depressing, my dude. We've got like, you can't have that as like what, the Fukuyama fucking, that's just how it is, fucking, that's how it's going to be. Like, that's, it can just as easily be something else, you know. We can strive to make it fucking better here, but also still fucking venture out, I think.
Well, that's the thing. It would entail massive systemic change in order for those two things to be simultaneous and sustainable. You know, the fact of the matter is the profit motive is heavily intertwined with that kind of Apollonian future focused kind of instinct of the ruling class. And when it comes to the issues on Earth, those are not priority. Those are not the things that get put, like, you know, a lot of emphasis on. And a lot of people want to buy into the escapist fantasy that this kind of technological utopianism promises them. It's a huge thing. And a lot of people are afraid to sort of reckon with it beyond just kind of surface level kind of clowning of Elon Musk, which I don't think is, like, people, especially on the left, there's this arrogance. They like to underestimate, you know, these billionaires, and then they like to underestimate like what they're capable of. And there's never really that much of an effort made to actually contend intellectually or philosophically with the solutions that they're proposing for the future. It's more just, oh, he tweeted this dumb thing. Isn't he dumb? And it's like, well, like, that's not critique. So, like, even though it's kind of a smooth brained thing, like, kudos to Bernie for at least saying something that was substantive, like making a substantive substantive kind of ish critique, even though it's smooth brained. And I feel like that more people should do that. More people should be trying to contend philosophically with these things. How far can the Apollonian instinct go before it becomes destructive?
I just think it's also a bit of a fruitless endeavor where we are technologically right now. Mm. It just seems like it would require so much resources to really make it an impactful endeavor. Because at the moment it is exactly that. It's for they've just sent that Japanese billionaire. He was the first guy to go up for the personal space trip. Yeah. That's now a thing. So that it's already being used for what it's designed for, if you know what I mean. But for anything meaningful for the story of humanity, you would need such a larger fucking effort put towards it. And we're just not technologically there. It takes fucking years and so much resources to do all of that stuff that I think that you're better off focusing on the stuff for now. But I still think that there's value in the scientific stuff that NASA have done, the Mars landing and stuff.
Yeah.
Recently with that rover and everything, I was tuned into it live. There was over 4 million people watching it live on YouTube alone, let alone everywhere else. That's amazing. That's a global thing. Everyone's very interested and excited for these sorts of feats of human ingenuity and stuff.
Yeah.
So it is a really impactful and important thing to still do. But I think just being realistic about it, if you know what I mean. Do you know, there's not going to be bubbles on Mars where, we're fucking growing potatoes and shit for quite a while. I don't think in my life, definitely not.
Why potatoes?
Well, it's like the Martian, isn't it? That's the experiments they do.
He was poop potatoes. He was making potatoes with his poop or something in it or whatever.
Oh yeah, so you use it's all fertilizer, isn't it?
Oh,
so you use that to fertilize the soil so you can grow.
People are always saying that the elite will go to Mars and leave us all on Earth, but it would be tremendously uncomfortable to try and sort of terraform and live there. And the elites are super obsessed with comfort. They're super obsessed with convenience as well. I just don't see these jelly brained lumpen weirdos actually doing something. It would take military level training in order to properly have the survival skills to be in that kind of thing. And I just don't see these kind of jelly brain geriatrics being the ones to pioneer it. So the idea of them sort of yeeting out or opting out of earthly existence because of climate change, I don't know. It just seems like another one of those weird sci-fi truisms that has wormed its way into culture.
I think even... Again, I think I've brought this up either this episode or in the bonus, but South Park kind of touched on this with
this fucking South Park bros.
I'm sorry, but I was a massive South Park fan throughout my fucking teenage years, and they do have a lot of fucking good apt cultural criticism, so I'm going to bring them up every now and then. But that was a whole fucking thing with Cartman and Heidi. The whole them being this weird sort of SJW soft boy girl relationship thing, and oh, it's okay babe, we're gonna get to Mars, that's gonna be the future for humanity. They see that as this sort of hopeful escapism, trying to be charitable about it, as hopeful escapism, completely oh, all of these people are just being barbaric and saying slurs and doing all of this horrendous behavior, and we want to go to Mars. We have bigger aspirations, so we're going to go to Elon Musk. That was literally the plot line. So
that's kind of the thing, which is why I'm saying it's important for people to contend with it philosophically, because part of the reason why I think it's important is because this stuff is going to start becoming more and more popular, this sort of tech utopian escapism, especially now that people are quote unquote politically hopeless and homeless, and people don't really see too much avenues for change to happen within society. All kinds of different escapist fantasies are going to start, especially market generated ones, are going to start kind of filling that void. And you can't, the left's kind of response to that is always, oh, these people are dumb and you believe in dumb things. And isn't Elon Musk a big dumb-dumb? And I'm a big dumb-dumb. It's almost as if their ego feels cucked because nobody wants to come to them. And I'm number one, there's a reason no one wants to come to you, because they see you as a distillment of all the problems of society masquerading as the solution. And number two, because you know, when all of the sort of solutions have been exhausted or there's been like massive disillusionment, people see technology as being like the one thing that actually quote unquote works. You type something into your app and then your Postmates is delivered to you. You have your iPhone that curates like your life or whatever. You turn on your fucking PlayStation and it works. And people see technology and the convenience of it, and also the problems that it has solved for us, as being the answer to the social problems. But it's like when it's mediated through these market forces, it can often exacerbate and cause even bigger problems. And I feel like, yeah, left people or people who are sort of have a material analysis should contend with this stuff philosophically rather than just being like, oh, look at the dum-dum and little Jeff Bezos, what a dum-dum. And it's like, well, they're not dum-dums. You can't underestimate them. They're not actually dumb. They're actually really fucking smart people. And of course, there are some people who are part of the billionaire class who are not smart and who kind of got there because of inheritance and this and that and blah, 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 blah. But there are certain ones of them that are smart within the constraints of the system, and they've been able to sort of they're more able and more empowered to create the future, to push the mode. Why do you think someone like a fucking Bill Gates feels so entitled in terms of shaping humanity's future? They see it as being their right, as like the people who have accumulated the most power and the most wealth. And in that, the future is kind of in these fucking people's hands, unfortunately, which a lot of people don't really want to face up to. They don't want to look at the ugly truth for what it is.
It's crazy, even with like around this whole coronavirus thing, Bill Gates has been like one of the most talked about of that class, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, Elon's not made enough Rogan appearances for him to quite compete with the press coverage that Billy Boy's had. But I mean, it was interesting. I remember reading about how the AstraZeneca Oxford, because it was like a combination, I think like Oxford University basically did the research and like made the vaccine happen. And then there's a medical company, AstraZeneca, basically are the ones helping distribute it and give the resources to make it and all of this kind of, or align the resources to make it or something. I might be a little bit wrong with that. Again, I'm not a doctor or an official source. This is just me trying to regale things that I read. But he was basically like, you know, as a scientist at Oxford University, I wanted to make, you know, this patented free so that it could be distributed to everybody and all the rest of it. But there was tremendous pressure put on us by the Gates Foundation that we wouldn't be able to enable distribution in that way. And so we should partner with AstraZeneca to make it a patented thing, and then everybody makes their bit of money as well. And it's just like, that is, you know, pretty sad to read about when we're going through this fucking pandemic and everything, that even those so-called billionaires, they don't have enough. It's still, they need to get a slice of the pie through the most fucking nefarious shit, even though they're getting regular daily bad press about them being involved in vaccines, all the comments they've made about vaccines that could be interpreted in God knows how many fucking ways.
Well, again, it's like the divine right of kings, but like on steroids, basically. And when it comes to like, you know, the quote unquote imagining new futures, well, this is the class of people who are the most empowered right now to do that. And that's what a lot of people don't want to contend with. And yeah, there needs to be more substantive challenges towards that mode. But really and truly, that should be the function of like the public intellectuals that are quote unquote on the left, and the people in media are on the left. But they're too busy like playing with their dicks and talking about, oh my God, you know, this crime fits my agenda. This mass shooting fits my agenda. So I'm going to harp on about that for ages, and the efficacy of fucking incest. And who said what on Twitter. That's what they're fucking concerned with. That's what they're doing. The sensationalism, all of the stupid shit, the media cycles that kind of keep them trapped within this sort of soulless mode, while the Elon Musks of the world and the Jeff Bezoses of the world and the Jack Dorseys of the world and all of these different people are busy imagining the fucking future. It's depressing. It's absolutely fucking depressing. And it just shows the entire fraudulence of the whole mode.
I want them to be a bit more adventurous, like Akon or something, where he's like building some crazy like mega future city in Africa or some shit. Like, do something cool, man. Like, you hear stuff like that, you're just like, Fucking right on, man. That's awesome. I didn't even listen to your music. I didn't realize you made that much money. But, like, that's fucking impressive. Like, that's cool. And I guess kind of an amount of what Elon Musk does is cool to an extent. Like, no, the whole, like, trying to do space and shit, like, that's pretty cool, dude. Like, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. But, you know, I also think that there's, like, he's trying to make it cool in some, in, like, internally as well. Yeah. So, like, I've read that, like, all of the rocket interfaces and stuff, it's the Tesla interface. Mm-hmm. So it's these sleek touchpad, you know, things with lights, and it all looks lovely.
2001.
Yeah, it looks very sci-fi. It looks brilliant. Yeah, but compared to, I guess, like, NASA's would have buttons and things.
Yeah.
But then there's an amount of me that's sort of like, and again, I'm not a fucking scientist, so I don't fucking know. But there's the part of my brain goes, you're in space, and, like, I hit the wrong thing on my iPhone all the fucking time. I wouldn't, like, how am I going to trust a touchscreen on a fucking spaceship? Like, I need the physical button that I can feel go clink to make me internally feel safe. But maybe, you know, I have a monkey brain, and that's why I'm not an astronaut, especially not an astronaut for Tesla.
Sorry, I didn't mean to open Pornhub on the fucking space station.
Oh my god, what's it, the version of they have that, like, karaoke for Teslas, it starts playing as they're going up, like Rocket Man or whatever.
Again, it's the private kind of sector kind of having to rely more on the aesthetic than the functionality. And even if Akon did build his fucking futuristic African city, in 20 years the whole shit would have stopped working, because Africa just doesn't have the infrastructure to support something like that. You would have to go under the surface and, like, dig through all of the systemic issues before you can sustain something like that. And, like, I'm from Nigeria, many have tried. Like, my mom, you know, does investments in, like, development and stuff like that. And for many years, there have been investors both internally and externally who have come into Nigeria trying to build, you know, futuristic cities and shit like that. And within 10 years, it becomes like a slum because the infrastructure just isn't there to fucking sustain it. We don't even have 24-hour electricity, for fuck's sake, you know? And they try to make these grand, like, Dubai-esque kind of things there. And they always end up falling into depletion because you have a country that's basically a libertarian utopia where, like, the private sector is expected to take care of everything, you know, including roads and electricity and all of those different things. So it's unsustainable.
But I guess that's why the Bill Gates is the most talked about one, though, because, like, you know, doing mega cities, that's cool. Doing space, it's pretty cool. Like, being really interested in vaccines and global health, it's a bit sus, bro. Yeah, it's a little bit sus. It's so, and, like, coming up with fucking dust bomb plans and shit for the fucking climate change and all sorts of shit, like, it is a little bit sus, like, when that's his interests. It's like, I guess you've done computers, so you're not going to do, like, computers again. And I guess your computers were never cool, though. You didn't do the cool computers. You did the functional Windows computers. Maybe that's why you're bitter and you want to eradicate everyone with your fucking vaccines. But I don't know.
That has been Jake's Conspiracy Hour here at Low Society. Thank you guys for listening to this episode. If you want to support us, we have a Patreon. You can support us there. We really appreciate it. We're finally getting our second mic. Woohoo! And that's thanks to everybody who's contributed to the show so far. We deeply appreciate every single one of you. Help us fulfill other goals. We're trying to come into video format and improve that now. So, you know, we need other things and other bits of equipment there. So if you want to support us on Patreon, feel free to help out.
Shit's about to get wild here. We're about to get the YouTube channel lit. It's all going to start coming peaches and cream. Yep. It's going to be looking fucking awesome and sexy. And yeah, we can't wait to show you all the improvements that we're going to make. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be sick. And yeah, we're planning on reverting back to our video format in the next couple of weeks as well, because it's going to be much easier for us to do that now. And also, you know, lots of exciting things to come. Lots of exciting guests in the wing as well. I'm working on some pretty fucking sick shit at the moment. And yeah, thank you guys so much for listening, and we shall catch you later. Love you guys. Bye.
Bye.